Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, I'm Georgia and welcome back for another episode of my midweek mystery series, in which today I want to talk to you about another unsolved serial killer case, but one which may have actually recently been solved. I don't often cover solved cases on my channel. I just feel like personally for me, there's not often much point rehashing solved stories, as I feel like a lot of the time that just seems to be more for entertainment of an audience rather than for the purposes of trying to help or spread a story. I do what I do here on my channel because of course I find it interesting, but also because I want to be able to do my part. I want to spread the word where I can. I've seen firsthand working with families how much some unsolved stories really do need a boost in the public eye and the difference that can make. So generally, unless it's a recently solved case that still needs a boost, or there's some sort of like relevant moral or social justice point I can make from the story, I do tend to let solved cases rest. This case may fall into the former there. Something has recently been solved and somebody has been arrested for similar crimes, not these crimes. It's all a bit confusing, as you'll come to see. There hasn't been a trial yet, and some people really do question whether the person arrested really is the serial killer dubbed Dr. No. A little bit more public awareness really could be what this case needs. And some other people doubt if Dr. No existed at all. But whether Dr. No really did exist as a serial killer or not, there's no doubt that something weird was going on in Ohio. You've probably already been able to tell, but I just want to address it before I continue talking. I've been quite ill. I have had the most horrendous cold, like the first post-COVID lockdowns cold, and it has absolutely finished me off. I've been ill now for about a week and a half, and it's just not showing any signs of going away. I do feel better now than I did like this time last week, but still, like, my throat is very, very croaky and my nose is blocked. I'm very swollen, very congested. So if you can hear that in this video, then I'm sorry, just ignore it. I've got to film. I've got to do my job. I can't be ill forever. So just fighting through. It just might not be the most pleasant to listen to or to watch. My nose is very, very sore. Our story begins in the early 1980s in Ohio, with the crimes attributed to the mysterious Dr. No spanning from then until around 2004. For years, the bodies of sex workers were found alongside Interstate 71, which runs all the way from Cleveland in the northeast of Ohio to Louisville in North Kentucky. It's believed there are at least 9 victims of this same killer, although there may well be more. Some sources quote as many as 12. Each body would be found in a different county. Each woman had been beaten or strangled to death. All were missing jewellery or clothes and were known or suspected sex workers who frequented truck stops for clients. In this time, truck stops were known for being rife with sex workers, so this was a very win-win situation for all. Men on long trips away from home desperate for intimacy, women looking for clients. It just made sense. The women would crawl into the sleeping compartments of the trucks for the night. The Union 76 truck stop in Austin Town was one of the main stops at this time, and it was the largest in the state. An article from the Orlando Sentinel in 1991 would say that 1.1 million trucks would pass through Austin Town every year. Three of the victims of the serial killer would be known to frequent this stop specifically. At the truck stops late at night, calls would be made over the truck's CB radios, either men calling out for sex workers or women offering their services. When someone responded, you'd arrange your appointment, and after the encounter was over, often the woman would use the radio of the trucker she was with to call for her next client, and so it went on. Often the woman would be dropped at the truck stop by pimps in the late evening and be picked up 12 hours later. I don't think I need to point out the dangers in this whole thing. Sex work is sadly a dangerous profession, and although you would hope not to come across any particularly creepy men, it was always a risk you were taking. On April 24th, 1981, the body of a young woman was found by three men in Miami County, a bit north of the town of Dayton. She was face down in a ditch. The cause of death was later found to be strangulation, but it was also noted that she had suffered head injuries. There were no personal belongings on the body, but the clothing was particularly distinctive. She was wearing a burnt orange turtleneck, blue jeans, and a very distinctive fringe suede jacket. Due to this jacket, the unidentified woman was nicknamed Buckskin Girl or Miami County Jane Doe. She would remain unidentified for 37 years until she was finally identified by the DNA Doe Project as 21-year-old Marcia King from Arkansas in 2018. But despite her identification, her murder remains unsolved. Probably not the strongest start to this video, but whilst Marcia King is considered to be on the list of victims of a possible serial killer called Dr. No, a lot of people do question this. Unlike the victims I'm about to talk about, it's not widely considered that Marcia was a sex worker, but she did live a transient lifestyle and likely hitchhiked often. It may well be that she was an early victim of this killer, who had simply come to focus his rage on sex workers in the coming years, as her murder did bear the hallmark of this killer. Marcia was missing clothing and jewellery, she was strangled and was found only 5 miles from an interstate. Or of course, she could have been a victim of someone else entirely, we just don't know. The second victim on the list, or the first that is considered to be 100% from this alleged serial killer, came on the 12th of June 1985. When a woman was discovered on the side of Interstate 71 by a state highway patrol trooper who was making road checks in search of disabled vehicles in the dark. The woman had been badly beaten, but she was alive and breathing, but unresponsive. The trooper did mouth-to-mouth resuscitation until medical help arrived, and she was rushed to nearby Mansfield General Hospital. She was soon identified as Marcia Matthews through fingerprints and a mugshot from a previous prostitution arrest. That was just the previous December. Marcia sadly died 2.5 days later due to a fractured skull and some pretty horrific brain damage. The cause of her death was blunt force trauma to the head. Her family made the difficult decision to take her off life support when it became obvious that Marcia wasn't going to be able to survive. They chose to donate her eyes, liver, and kidney in an attempt to make something good out of something horrible. The subsequent investigation didn't turn up too much. The sheriff's sergeant did speak with a trucker who claimed that he'd seen Marcia at the truck stop about 2.5 hours before she was found at the side of the road. The story he told was that he'd asked Marcia to wake him up at 2:30 a.m. so he could get back on the road, but I don't think he'd admit if he'd paid for her services. At autopsy, it was found that Marcia had scrapes on her arm and forehead that seemed to indicate that she had been beaten. It was also thought that her body was probably pushed out of a stopped truck rather than a moving one, so somebody pulled up on the side of the interstate and pushed her body out. But that's about all the information they have. Since Marcia's death, this case has been opened up multiple times, but each time all leads have been exhausted. Marcia's daughter Shannon has also never given up on finding her mother's killer, but there's only so much you can do. According to Lou Whitmire for WKYC, all evidence has been submitted to the Bureau of Criminal Investigations lab, and as technology has progressed, things have been resubmitted, but it really is just a waiting game. This case does remain open though, so even if they do have further evidence than this, it can't really be made public yet. Over a year later, on the 20th of July 1986, another body was found behind a traffic barrier on Interstate 71 in Medina County. 23-year-old Shirley Taylor was last seen at Union 76, that popular truck stop, and she had been beaten and strangled to death, with all jewellery and several pieces of clothing removed from her body. 18-year-old April Barrett was found on 3rd of December that same year. Her body was also found dumped behind a guardrail on Interstate 71, this time in Ashland County. But despite all the similarities between each of these accounts I've given, no connection would be made between any of these cases just yet. That would come with the next murder of Anne-Marie Patterson. 27-year-old Anne-Marie was working at the Union 76 truck stop on the night of the 7th to the 8th of February 1987 when she disappeared. Interestingly, Anne-Marie had actually been in contact with the authorities on the day before her disappearance, offering to provide information about a spate of killings. After being arrested for criminal trespass, she'd told an officer that she had some sketchy information about who may have been responsible for the murders of three sex workers who frequented truck stops in the Youngstown area, but she said she was afraid she'd be killed if she shared any more. So clearly, even though the police hadn't made any connection between all these deaths just yet, sex workers had. Anne-Marie disappeared that next night before they were able to get back to her and request any more information. Coincidence or not? Both investigators and Anne-Marie's husband have said that they're unsure whether she did actually have information or not, whether she did really know the killer's identity or was just trying to get off her charge. Anne-Marie had moved to Ohio from Massachusetts after she had fallen pregnant, and she started in sex work at truck stops to cover the financial needs of her and her husband, William. It seems that this was an arrangement between the couple, as Anne-Marie's husband would say to the Pittsburgh Press that he dropped his wife off at the Union 76 truck stop to work that night, as she needed money to pay a fine from her arrest the day before. Once they arrived at the truck stop, the couple sat in William's car for a little bit, attempting to link up with one of the truckers parked there so she could use a CB radio to contact customers. I assume that eventually she did find one because William says that he then heard a man called Dr. No call out for sex workers over the radio. One sex worker using the CB name Reno turned Dr. No down, saying that she wouldn't deal with him that night. Over CB radios, it's commonplace to use code names, nicknames, instead of your actual names. So then Dr. No called out directly to Anne-Marie using her CB name, Sleeping Beauty. She replied saying, "No thank you, I know you." William said that Anne-Marie told him that this guy had caused problems in the past, that he was trouble. William suspects Anne-Marie may have had trouble with this guy the day before, which had maybe led to her being arrested. Eventually, William left, leaving Anne-Marie, 6 months pregnant, to earn her money for the night, but he never saw her again, despite Anne-Marie having a rule that she must stay at the truck stop with clients and she wouldn't let them drive away with her. It's believed that she may have been killed or at least knocked unconscious while still at the stop. 43 days later, Anne-Marie's body was found trussed up in a sleeping bag 4 to 6 inches deep in water next to Interstate 71, 250 miles from where she had last been seen. But the body was in unusually good condition considering that she should have died well over a month ago. What had happened? Well, the autopsy revealed that Anne-Marie had indeed died within 48 hours of her disappearance. But when her body was found, it was thought that she hadn't even been by the interstate for 24 hours. The condition of her body actually indicated that she'd been kept refrigerated for weeks. And this makes this killer all that much more concerning. It takes a depraved person to kill in the first place, but it's a whole other kind of killer to keep hold of the body for a month. We don't know where she was kept refrigerated, but it has been suggested that the type of truck the killer drove, if the killer was indeed a truck driver, was a refrigerated truck. I struggled to find a cause of death for Anne-Marie, but it does seem like she was beaten to death, her head described as bashed in. William, Anne-Marie's husband, told police he'd identified this mysterious Dr. Nose truck that night as being a long-nosed Peterbilt semi. I'm not going to pretend that I know anything about semi-trucks, or as we'd call them here in the UK, Arctic lorries. I'm just picturing your standard lorry, but the description might mean more to someone else than it does me. A detective working Anne-Marie's case described the man using the radio name Dr. No as a dark-haired man of possible Middle Eastern descent, between 25 and 40 years old. It was suspected that he drove for North American van lines, and it was said that the Fort Wayne Shipping Company was cooperating with the investigation. By this point, finally, they had made the link between four of the murders: Marsha Matthews, Shirley Taylor, April Barrett, and Anne-Marie Patterson, and believed that they were all killed by the same person. However, this Dr. No was not actually considered a suspect in the early days. It was considered crucial that they interviewed him, as he might have had important information, but the detective simply said, "He's someone that we want to talk to, that's the best I can tell you." It does seem there was a bit of bickering between sheriff's offices in Ohio at this time. The four murders I mentioned prompted a multi-county task force investigation, but it quickly became clear that the different offices had different ideas on how this needed to be approached. Each victim was found in a different county, which to me seems to be a very deliberate move by the killer, as it means there would be four different counties working on what should essentially be the same case. The main disagreements between the officers, it seems, was the amount of information being shared, with some not in agreement that the murders were the work of a serial killer, and some being concerned that too much information being shared led to copycat killers. It sounds like I'm rounding up here, but sadly, Anne-Marie was not the last victim of this potential serial killer, not even close. On the 10th of August 1987, so just a few months later, another victim was found by passers-by in Englewood, jeans and underwear around her ankles, wearing a blue bandana and missing the upper part of her outfit. The woman had been strangled and dumped down a hill near an off-ramp to Interstate 70 in Dayton, Ohio, likely thrown from a moving car. The woman was thought to be between 20 to 25 years old, there was no evidence of sexual assault and no drugs in her system, and despite having distinctive tattoos of a unicorn and a red rose, she would remain unidentified, known as Englewood Jane Doe, for 22 years. Despite all their best efforts, and after so many years, the detectives eventually had to give up on trying to identify the department's only unidentified person's case. But then came a miraculous day in 2009, and this is a prime example of why I believe so strongly in sharing stories like this one, sharing the stories of Doe specifically. 42-year-old Stephanie Clack called up Englewood Police and said, "I'm getting ready to solve your murder case." Her 21-year-old sister, Paula Beverly Davis, had disappeared from her home in Kansas City on the 9th of August 1987. Paula spoke to her family every single day without fail, so when that night transpired that nobody knew where she was, her family immediately panicked. Her mother, Esther, immediately tried to file a missing persons report with the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, but she was told that Paula was 21, of legal age, and was allowed to leave town if she wanted to. Esther pushed, telling the officer that Paula liked to get rides at local truck stops and hitchhike home, that she was worried something had happened to her while she was hitchhiking, but she was pretty much ignored, of course. It wasn't until the 17th, a whole week later, that she was finally allowed to file the report, but even then it was pretty much ignored by the department. Every few years, the family would get a call from the police and be asked to identify a body, but it was never Paula. Sadly, Esther ended up having a nervous breakdown because of what happened and died in 2005. But then one night in October 2009, Stephanie and their other sister Alice were watching a TV show called The Forgotten, a show featuring a group of amateur sleuths who solved missing persons cases. At the end of the episode, there was information about NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. So the sisters logged on in an attempt to find their missing sister. It was a long shot, but they typed in what they knew about Paula, which immediately turned up 10 results. She read down the files until coming to the last one, file 985, featuring a description of a unicorn tattoo and a rose tattoo, and Stephanie knew immediately that they'd found Paula. It took her less than 20 minutes. After contacting the relevant authorities, DNA testing was done and it was a match. Englewood Jane Doe was definitely Paula Davis, and eventually the sisters raised enough money to have Paula exhumed and reburied next to her mother and grandmother in Kansas City. However, despite the family now knowing what happened to Paula, knowing that she didn't abandon them, it's only partial closure. They still don't have any solid answers yet as to who killed her. After the identification, the police did go and interview Paula's roommate at the time she disappeared, Kathy Woods. Kathy told them that her and Paula were like sisters. They're both drug addicts and sex workers hanging out at the Oak Grove truck stop all night. On the night of August 8th, Kathy said that she, Paula and an unknown blonde girl went to the truck stop together, but there were a number of police officers there and Kathy was scared of getting arrested, so she stayed in the truck they'd been sitting in whilst Paula and the blonde girl left for the next truck. That was the last time she saw her. The next morning, Kathy left the truck to go and find Paula but couldn't find her anywhere, even after calling out for her on a CB radio. So she returned back to their apartment to wait. The blonde girl did come back, but Paula never did. Despite Paula's death often being connected to the Dr. No murders and her name being on the official list, there is questions surrounding it. Whilst Paula's actual sisters believe that she was killed in Kansas City, they don't believe she was a drug addict or involved in sex work at the time, as Kathy says. They said she'd recently turned her life around and hitchhiked around the country to attend concerts. They believe that Paula was headed back to her apartment in Kansas City when she was murdered. Englewood is about a 10-hour drive from Kansas City. If this is the case, then she really could have been a Dr. No victim, regardless of whether she was engaging in sex work at the time or not. Her murder was very much consistent with the murders of Dr. No. Others believe that Paula may have been killed by a drug dealer following reports that a Kansas City drug dealer was looking for her after her and Kathy had recently stolen some drugs from him. There's no way of knowing. On the 22nd of November, the body of 19-year-old LaMonica Cole was found at a truck stop in Breezewood, Pennsylvania. She was the first potential victim not found in Ohio. Despite the fact that she was found at a truck stop in an interstate other than I-71, she was included as a potential victim of Dr. No because she died as a result of strangulation, was a native of Ohio, and had belongings missing. LaMonica's pimp told police she'd left on the day of her disappearance with a man who drove a blue semi-trailer truck with white stripes. While sources say that LaMonica was included on the list because she died of strangulation, other sources suggest that it may have actually been asphyxiation, noting a scarf shoved down her throat. On the 29th of March 1988, 31-year-old Terry Rourke was found murdered in New York, her body found on a bridge over the Mohawk River. It was found that she died from a traumatic brain injury received through beating with a blunt object. Some of her clothes have never been found, which seems to be the only reason she's included on the list of potential victims. The last official victim came on the 19th of April 1990, when another body was found by a dumpster behind a busy truck stop at Interstate 70. Like the others, most of this woman's clothes were missing, although her pants did remain, and the autopsy found that she had died from a traumatic brain injury resulting from a beating. She had had sex 12 to 24 hours before her death, which led investigators to believe that she was involved in sex work and had met the elusive Dr. No. Despite attempts to identify this woman, she remained unidentified for many years, known only as Jane Doe 2 or Licking County Jane Doe. However, in 2017, it was discovered that Jane Doe was actually 29-year-old Patrice Corley, whose sister-in-law had tried to report her missing from her hometown of Louisville back when she first disappeared. However, because the sister-in-law wasn't a blood relative, she was told that she couldn't file the report. In 2016, the sister-in-law contacted the new Louisville Metro Police Department, and this time her report was accepted. They began contacting Patrice's relatives to get a DNA sample, which was soon linked to the Licking County Jane Doe. She should not have been a Jane Doe for as long as she was. After she was identified, a homicide case was reopened, and they have said that there have been some significant leads in her case, but it has not yet been solved. Really interestingly, the majority of these cases I've shared today weren't actually linked together by law enforcement, but rather by a journalist named Michael Behrens. In the early days, law enforcement did suspect a serial killer, as I said, around Anne-Marie's case, but the case went cold, it kind of got brushed over, and I don't think anyone knew the true extent to which this was happening. Each of the bodies was discovered in a different county, and the different sheriff's offices just didn't communicate enough to cross-reference every single one of these cases, so it was very easy for similarities to get lost. Behrens was writing an article on serial killers, and discovered in the process how sex workers were common targets for these killers. So he dives even deeper and decides to look into old cases in Ohio, focusing on the deaths of sex workers. He soon finds 8 cases which were eerily similar, 8 of the cases I've shared with you today, all sex workers found dead alongside or near major interstates, all of whom had strong links to truck stops, and all of whom were missing clothing or items of jewellery. The coincidences were too big for him to ignore. Behrens publishes his article in the Columbus Dispatch, and just 10 days later, the Ohio Attorney General formed a task force to look into the cases. Finally, all these different counties had to start communicating and share their cases. Behrens was right, they were all incredibly similar. It can't have been a coincidence that each of these bodies just so happened to be placed in different counties. This led to a lot of speculation the killer may have been someone involved in law enforcement. They definitely seemed to have an idea of how investigations like this work. Behrens also noted in his article that at least 2 of the women were last seen getting into a black or dark blue Peterbilt truck, and the killer may have gone by the CB names Dr. No, Stargazer, or Dragon. And if you remember correctly, Anne-Marie's husband also said that Dr. No had a dark-coloured Peterbilt truck. Over the next few months or years, investigators would interview hundreds of sex workers and pimps, service station workers, truck drivers, in order to get an idea of what was going on. Interestingly, the description they got of a potential killer was completely different than that of what investigators in the Anne-Marie Patterson case had got years earlier. If you remember correctly, Anne-Marie's possible killer, or this possible Dr. No, was described as a dark-haired man of possible Middle Eastern descent between 25 and 40 years old. This time, investigators got a description of a tall, large man with fair skin and dark hair, aged 25 to 40, wore glasses, and talked with an accent like he was from a northeastern state. Even his truck was described as a 1984 silver truck with a wind blocker and a red hood, as opposed to the dark-coloured Peterbilt trucks from previous descriptions. Once again, I admit to knowing nothing about the trucking world, but it could of course be possible that he just started driving a new truck at some point. It would actually probably be smart to switch up his trucks if he was a serial killer. The Ohio State Police Department posted over 4,000 photographs of the victims across the state, as well as an identikit, sort of a sketch of the potential killer, at 130 different truck stops and service stations throughout the state, as well as in 9 other states as well. They offered $10,000 for any information about this man. As a result of this search, 5 people were detained and questioned, but no charges were ever filed against any of them, nor were their names ever publicly released. DNA, or biological traces, were found on quite a few of the bodies, as well as sperm. However, of course, these women were sex workers, and the sperm didn't necessarily have to have come from the perpetrator. According to the investigators, though, the biological traces did definitely come from the perpetrator. I don't know the details on how they know that, but we're going to trust them. Despite the police never releasing the names of those they had detained, there have been a few more public suspects over the years, and I'll share a couple with you. In 1990, a man called Alvin Wilson, a truck driver, was arrested on charges of assault and attempted murder of a woman, a sex worker, from the previous October. The woman managed to survive the attack and contacted the police, telling them how Wilson had beat and strangled her. He would become a suspect in the Dr. No case in 1991, after it was found that his hair sample matched those found on some of the victims. Credit card receipts did place Wilson in Youngtown at the time of three of the murders. However, he was in jail at the time one of the murders occurred, and he was arrested the day before another victim was found. So there are some things thrown into question there. It's not known if he was connected to any of the other cases, and he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison for the 1989 attack. So this suspect, it never really went much further than this, but he was an interesting guy, that's for sure. In 1994, 36-year-old James Robert Cruz started to be looked at in connection with the case. He was a truck driver who lived in Ohio and had murdered a teenager in Pennsylvania in 1993, for which he was arrested. It was noted that the sex worker murders stopped after he was arrested, and his victim in Pennsylvania was killed in a similar manner to the Dr. No victims. But again, this never went any further than this. I don't have any more information, but an interesting guy. In 1995, a man called Sean Patrick Goebel was arrested. The body of a woman, later identified as Brenda K. Hagee, was found in the middle of a residential road just off of Interstate 81 in Tennessee in mid-January. The detectives on this case immediately recalled a recent Unsolved Mysteries episode in which the Dr. No case was spoken about, sex workers being killed and dumped near major interstates. They noticed that this woman was missing her shoes and underwear. After 3 months of detective work, tracking down a fingerprint they found at the scene of the crime, they arrested Sean Patrick Goebel, a 6'3", 310-pound trucker from North Carolina. Apparently, it took only a few minutes of questioning until he cracked and started confessing. In the months since Brenda's murder, two more bodies had turned up. Another in Tennessee of Rebecca Alice Haynes and one in North Carolina, Sherry Masseur. He confessed and was charged with the murders of all three women. Detectives in the Dr. No case got excited. These were stories incredibly similar to their own victims, but Goebel has vehemently denied having anything to do with the Dr. No deaths. It's noted that he only got his trucking license 3 years before he was arrested in 1995, and he wasn't on the roads when the majority of these murders took place. He was actually still in high school when the first murder took place in 1981, and he was in the army in the mid-1980s. If the Dr. No murders are all linked as they suspect, then Goebel isn't the best suspect here. All of which brings us, I suppose, to the man who is currently thought to be Dr. No. I have a lot of thoughts about this, and I'm going to be very interested to hear what you guys have to say in the comments. In early 2019, 49-year-old truck driver Samuel Legg III was arrested in Arizona. He was actually arrested on a rape charge for the rape of a teenage girl in Medina County, Ohio in 1997. She had hitched a ride with him to go and visit her boyfriend in Cleveland before she was attacked at a Speedway truck stop on Interstate 71. This case got solved 22 years after it happened, simply because of advancements in DNA technology, and Legg was extradited from Arizona back to Ohio to face trial for his crime. It actually seems that Legg was a suspect for this crime back in 1997, but no charges were ever brought forward. But of course, Legg's crimes didn't end there. The DNA used to solve the rape case also linked Legg to multiple homicides as well. Just hours after being arraigned in Medina County on two counts of rape, Legg was indicted in the 1992 murder of Sharon Kudzerski. Sharon's body had been found near a truck stop in Austintown, Ohio, her cause of death, blunt force trauma, but it would take 2 decades for her body to be identified. In May and June 2011, Sharon's daughters submitted their DNA to NamUs in the hope that they might finally be able to discover what happened to their mother, why she disappeared. Unbeknownst to them, that very next year, a new investigator at the coroner's office also uploaded the DNA of their Jane Doe. A match was flagged, and the daughters now knew what had happened to their mother, and Sharon finally had a name. The wonders of DNA didn't just give Sharon her name back, though. DNA found on her body also linked her to Samuel Legg III. He was her murderer. On December 20th, 1996, a naked body was found behind the Union 76 truck stop and was soon identified as Victoria Jane Collins. The manner of death was found to be homicide, and she'd also been raped. DNA was found at the scene, which would also later be linked to Samuel Legg. He was also charged in the murder of Julie A. Conkle, whose body was found behind the old center's truck stop in Lake County in 1997. She had been strangled. Legg is also strongly suspected in the 1990 murder of his own 14-year-old stepdaughter, Angela Hicks, whose body was found near Midway Mall in Lorain County. He was a suspect in that at the time, but seeing as there was no actual evidence, he's never been charged, but the case has since been reopened. It seems that Legg was charged in total on one count of murder, two counts of aggravated murder, and one count of rape and kidnapping. This was all back in early 2019, and there still hasn't been a trial, as it seems he isn't considered mentally competent enough to stand trial. According to an article in the Chronicle, he was living in a group home in Arizona at the time of his arrest. In 2015, he'd been arrested for trespassing when he tried to get into a stranger's car outside a McDonald's. Police reports over the following months would show his mental state worsening, when he was found multiple times wandering alone in the desert, sometimes dehydrated and badly sunburnt. He would be manic, constantly muttering to himself. He didn't seem to be fully conscious at that point of what was going on. He was very confused. However, because his trespassing incident was considered to be a minor crime, Legg wasn't actually obligated to provide DNA samples at that time, meaning that this wasn't how the authorities actually got hold of him. No, they actually tracked him down through familial DNA, completely unrelated to this arrest and his worsening mental state. From what I can gather, the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigations had been focusing on some cold cases, and had noticed that the DNA database had managed to link three different homicides, but didn't connect any existing DNA of a perpetrator on file. So they employed a new tool that searched the database for family members, closely linked DNA. They came across Legg's brother, who had been convicted of some other crime. From there, they pull up Samuel Legg's file and found that he'd been questioned for raping a teenage girl back in 1997. Luckily, they still had the evidence, the rape kit, from that crime, and in the rape kit, they had the perpetrator's DNA. From there, it all fell into place. That was matched to Samuel Legg, and so was the rest of the crimes. After appearing in court for the trespassing charge, Legg was given court-mandated mental health treatment and was placed in a group home, which made him quite easy for investigators to find. He was very soon arrested. A lot of the time when serial killers are said to be not mentally fit to stand trial, you can assume it's because they're putting it on, they're playing the system. You see it time and time again. But in Legg's case, that really does seem to be the case. He was getting more and more sick in the years leading up to his arrest. According to the Ohio Attorney General's office, he has been diagnosed with neurosyphilis and schizophrenia. And because of these mental health issues, Legg has been involuntarily committed to the Twin Valley Behavioral Health Center in Columbus, Ohio, and is not permitted to leave. In 2019, a judge gave prosecutors a one-year deadline to restore Legg to competency, but in August of just this year, 2021, it was ruled that he is officially unfit to stand trial, as he is incapable of assisting in his own defence. Subsequently, he's been returned back to the health centre, which is where he'll probably stay. But this video is about Dr. No, not about the crimes of Samuel Legg. You can all guess where I'm going with this. Ever since his arrest, many news sources have explicitly stated that Samuel Legg is Dr. No and that this case is solved, but that is absolutely not the case. In 2019, he simply became a suspect in the murders, for obvious reasons. He was a truck driver who has been proven to have killed several women, leaving their bodies at truck stops. This guy is almost definitely a serial killer, but is he Dr. No? We simply don't know at this point. Legg was actually a teenager when a number of the murders attributed to the mysterious Dr. No were committed. Marsha King was murdered in 1981, but Legg wasn't born until 1969. That would have made him 12 years old when the murders took place. Not impossible, but I think we can all agree, highly unlikely. Marsha Matthews was murdered in 1985, so he would have been 16. Less impossible for sure, but he definitely wouldn't have been driving trucks at this point in his life. But I do think it's important to note that the Dr. No clue never came up in this case until 1987. It could be that Legg is Dr. No from 1987 onwards, and Dr. No has been falsely held responsible for the earlier murders. They are very similar, but there's nothing to say they're 100% connected. You don't know for sure that any of these murders are 100% connected. They could all be different. From what I've been able to gather, the authorities have never turned around and said that Samuel Legg is Dr. No. He's been pegged as a possible suspect in some of the murders. It's more than likely that Dr. No was never a serial killer at all, that these murders were the work of more than one person over the years. It could just be a coincidence that all the bodies were found by interstates, all in different counties, all missing clothes and jewellery. It does sound crazy that it's a coincidence, but it really could be. Sex workers at truck stops all over the country are in highly dangerous situations where they're getting in trucks with random men. And if they are murdered by a trucker, then it makes sense their bodies will be dumped on major roads. You can't exactly take an 18-wheeler down a little dirt road to hide a body, can you? It could be that 2, 3, 4 or maybe even more men are responsible for these crimes. Maybe this was a known thing within the trucking community between a number of men. If you're going to dump a body, here is what you do. But there's even potential that this wasn't the work of a trucker. Many people think that it's more likely to be a police officer or someone who used to work in law enforcement. Although two victims were last seen getting into a truck, we don't know for sure that that would have been their last client of the night. Maybe it would be smart of someone to pick up sex worker victims at a truck stop, knowing that everyone would assume that it would be a trucker responsible for the murders, and then dump each body in a different county because you know the different counties don't communicate, because you're in law enforcement. Maybe. Maybe the guy who used the CB radio name Dr. No really was just a creepy guy. Maybe he was a bit lechy, maybe he made the women feel uncomfortable, maybe he asked for things that they didn't want to do. Does that make him a serial killer? We don't know. Legg has denied being Dr. No, but he is definitely a serial killer. He's definitely responsible for more than the 3 murders that he's been accused of. There's not a doubt of that in my mind. Is he responsible for any of the murders we've spoken about today? There's no way of knowing yet. Maybe he is responsible for all of them. Maybe just a couple. I really do have to question if the information that authorities do have DNA from a number of the Dr. No murders is true, then why has that not yet been linked to Samuel Legg if he was indeed Dr. No? It seems to me to be pretty irresponsible reporting to say that Dr. No has been solved and it's 100% Samuel Legg, as was said by so many different news outlets. It stops people from continuing to listen out for information. It makes people think like, oh, I was concerned about this weird cousin I have, but you know what? Now I've read that they've captured someone, I can forget about that. This case isn't solved. There's at least 8 murders out there. Whether they're by the same or different people, that still very much needs to be spoken about. It could be Samuel Legg, but we don't know that yet. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I really hope my horrible cold voice hasn't been too hard to listen to. Fingers crossed I'll be better by next week. If I'm not, I'll be very, very sad. I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.